You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, my name is Vaughn Armstrong. I've played more characters in the Star Trek universe than anybody, and I was Admiral Forrest. You are listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
Now, today, we are doing something quite fun. We're doing an episode rewrite of Infinite Regress, Season 5, Episode 7. For those of you who do not remember, here is the summary sentence. The discovery of a compromised Borg vinculum causes Seven to develop multiple personality disorder.
Now, we talked about this last week with Essential Voyager, Season 5, but we're really going to delve into it this week.
Yes, very much so. And in my preparation, what I like to do is I like to watch the episode sometime in the week between our episodes. And then right before the show, I like to read the summary on Memory Alpha, just kind of as a refresher. And I went, to Memory Alpha just a few moments ago. And I checked the episode summary. Someone spent a lot of time on this summary. This is practically the novelization of Infinite Regress.
Oh my God, you're kidding. Wow, okay. I've had a really busy day today and did not get to Memory Alpha. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Tell me about this. Okay.
Yeah, I'll read you the first paragraph. So check this out.
Late night, aboard USS Voyager. In Cargo Bay 2, 7 of 9 regenerates in her alcove. The lights are low. All is quiet. But then, a loud, echoing cacophony of voices is heard. 7 awakens. She glances about suspiciously and steps down from the alcove, ignoring the computer's warning that the regeneration cycle is incomplete. She stalks about the room in a manner most unlike her.
It's amazing. Like, everybody needs to read this. Like...
Wow.
Part of me is going, wow, this is really good. Another part of me is going, really? Like, this is what you spend your time on?
I kind of wish that we could use the whole time that we allot for our podcast for you to read this synopsis, because I really enjoyed story time with Tristan.
What's weird is that this person treats the reader as if they have no idea what Voyager is. Like, they explain what each person does, and who they are, and like why it's important in the episode that they're doing what they're doing. It's very, very odd.
Okay, wow. Yeah, I am intrigued because most Memory Alpha synopses are usually, I mean, if they're complete, they're not nearly as detailed as this. And like you said, somebody, whoever did this, is extremely dedicated. They put a lot of time into this. But okay, there is a difference between a passionate hobby and a fetish.
Okay, yeah. And
I think we're crossing that line.
I kind of want to find out who the author is. I want to see if there is a way to find that out and then find their other summaries and like rank their summaries.
Sort of like how Enterprise Extra on Twitter has a whole website dedicated to his rankings for all of Star Trek. You could rank the synopses on Memory Alpha.
Now, Jim, his name's Jim. And
yes, Jim. His name is Jim.
His name is... I do that to him constantly.
How can you not? His name is Jim.
Do you know... I can never remember. Does he change them at all? I remember when he first published the list and everything like that. And it's amazing. Only he would go through and put in the dedication. Because, whenever somebody talks about an episode, he will chime in with his number.
Right. Yes. Always.
Now, I would never be able to do that in a million years. I would never be able to choose, what my number one episode is. I couldn't even choose a top 10, let alone a top 700. And also, they change from month to month, how I interpret them.
What day of the week? What time of day? I mean, you can really break this down. And more power to him for doing it, because, like you said, I don't know if I could. What if he wrote this synopsis?
No, he doesn't love Voyager that much.
That's true. It's not his favorite. Well, that's a dirty old shame, but that's for another show, another time.
But speaking of Jim, for those of you who don't know or who don't follow me on Twitter or don't have a Twitter, I have bought my tickets for Star Trek Las Vegas 50.
Yay! Finally! Yeah!
I'm finally going to go. This is going to be my first time to Vegas, my first time to a Vegas convention, and I want to meet as many people as I can. If you're hearing my voice, I want you to find me at VegasCon and shake my hand and say you're a loyal listener. And I am right utterly excited because the reason why I'm bringing it up is because Jim is the only person who I follow online who I've met in real life.
Ah, okay. Yes.
And I actually met him before I signed on to Twitter, I think, because we used to work together.
Oh, okay.
We used to work for the same company. He worked for the Los Angeles branch. I worked for the Chicago branch.
Oh, okay.
But I'm going to get to meet Matt for the first time. Matt, yes. Hansen, my podcasting partner. But more importantly, if someone
darn right,
you know, holds up her end of the bargain, I'm going to meet her for the first time. Can you tell me who that person is?
I believe you might be talking about me. And no, it's not because I'm a narcissist.
Oh, and Matt, if you're listening, I love you equally.
Yes, I am going to be there. I think it was last week, I sucked it up and decided, okay, unemployed or not, I'm still looking for work. By the time August rolls around, I'll have something. Something's going to be going. I'm going to suck it up and I'm going to get the ticket before it sells out. So I am going to be there. No way in the world would I miss this moment to meet my co-host of 3+ years along with everybody else. And it's going to be such a freaking huge mayhem event. I kind of felt like I can't not go.
No.
I have to be there. And
So you bought the ticket. You bought your tickets.
I did. So I'm going to be there too, and this is going to be a glorious effing moment.
This is going to be so much fun. Not only is it going to be so much fun because all of us are going to be together for the first time.
Yeah, a lot of us are going. A lot of us.
But it's the 50th.
Yes, the 50th freaking anniversary. And you know, especially with these inflated ticket prices, they are going to pull out all the stops and make it a yeah. huge freaking memorable event. At least they better.
Yeah, they better. Yeah, and it's, oh my gosh, like it's insane. Like Matt and I are splitting a hotel room. And he was nice enough to get my ticket for me because he was better Johnny on the spot. And so we're swapping funds and, you know, like figuring out who owes who what. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I'm not even through the doors yet. Like I haven't even made it to the vendor's room. And I've already dropped so much cash.
Oh, I know. It really does cost a lot to go to Vegas, especially this year, because it's a 5-day event if you want to go to the whole thing. And you've got to spend $250 for a 5-day pass. I don't think they're going to do single day passes for this one. They're going to sell out. They are not going to oversell because they want everybody to have a seat. And so when they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah.
And yet, if you want to go, this is what you have to do. It kind of stinks, and like by principle, I was really opposed to doing it on top of just the money crunch that we're in right now. Like, you know, we're on a budget. We can't spend $250 on just something random like this right now. But
yeah.
You got me this time because of everybody who's coming out who I may never see again, or it'll be years before I see again. Mm-hmm. Who knows? It might not happen for a very long time. And so, hey, carpe diem.
That's right. That's right. It's only money, right?
Right.
All right. Well, I'm excited. You're excited. Let's start the show.
I think we ought to start the show. As exciting this is, I think we actually could do a whole show about this, but I think we ought to do it when we are in Vegas and do a live podcast from the Rio.
Yeah. No,
since we're both going to be there, why the hell not?
Yeah, that's totally going to happen.
Okay, awesome. All right. Well, in the meantime, we are rewriting Infinite Regress.
Yes, we're rewriting Infinite Regress, and it's the one where Seven goes crazy. And she starts getting multiple personalities and acting them out, and it's all of the people that she has assimilated in the 18 years that she was a Borg. So I'll just give a quick summary. So what happens is that Seven is not acting like herself. Like she's breaking her sleep schedule, and she's assuming the identity of people that she has assimilated in the past 18 years. And she has no memory of this. Like when she takes on that personality has no idea what's going on. Like, it has a limited aspect or perspective of what's going on, and so they just assume the personality, and Seven forgets it the moment that she drops back into consciousness. And it's getting progressively worse. It's getting worse and worse and worse. And they figure out that it's all because they're getting closer to an abandoned Borg vinculum, which is the device that allows all of the Borg to talk to each other.
Yes.
And because of the proximity to it, you know, Seven's mind starts becoming more and more unhinged, and she can't control herself, and she's getting more personalities. And so they're like, okay, well, we just got to destroy the vinculum. Well, an alien race comes along and says, you can't destroy the vinculum. We put a lot of time and effort into this, because what happens is that we found it, programmed it, and then a Borg cube comes along, reassimilates it, and then everybody goes crazy, and they destroy the ship again, and it repeats itself over and over again. It's our tiny little way of destroying the Borg.
Right, yeah, they kind of ID4'd it, where they put a virus into the Borg vinculum, and then they're hoping that's going to destroy the Borg.
But did they use Windows 95? We may never know.
Don't know. On an Apple MacBook, I believe.
Oh, was it an Apple MacBook?
It was. Yeah. But, you know, whenever operating systems are portrayed in movies, they often get it wrong. And I don't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen ID4. I don't remember if they used an Apple system or if they used Windows or what have you.
I can't remember.
I remember in Office Space, you know, they had like a weird hybrid of both like DOS and Mac and Windows. And it was all messed up. And of course, nobody used anything like that back then.
Are you going to see the new one? Are you going to see Independence Day 4 Resurgence?
Yeah, probably. Are you?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I might rent it.
I'm going to be a sucker into it.
Yeah, I was a big fan when it came out. But yeah, I was just
me
like,
too.
I don't think anybody really asked for the sequel.
No, I never. That's the thing. I always thought that this was a movie where there would not be a sequel. And then lo and behold, they just can't leave it alone. Although I hear that it's a lot better than meets the eye. You know, but beyond the idea. So I'm probably going to give it a chance.
Oh, well, I guess we'll find out. Well, back to Voyager. The alien said, you know, like, no, you can't destroy it. And Janeway was like, well, too bad. I'm going to do it anyway. And then violence ensues. And of course, Voyager comes out on top. And while all this is going on, Tuvok mind melds with Seven to find her personality and bring it back. He does it in the nick of time.
And granted, this is really risky.
Of course.
Naturally.
There's never a mind meld that's not risky, apparently.
Yeah, and this one is like super, super risky.
Is this I cannot remember. Is this the episode where the doc says, believe it or not, I know more about Vulcan mind melds than you do?
Okay.
Or is that the one with Suter?
Oh my gosh. I actually watched the episode and I don't remember that. My memory is awful.
Same here. I actually watched the episode and I don't remember. Well, okay. Regardless.
It was a few days ago. I did this in the middle of the week. Maybe I shouldn't have. Anyway.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite moments in Voyager, is just like when the doc superiority goes so far as to say and be honest with him knowing more about Vulcan mind melds than a Vulcan does.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the episode, but everything turns out okay. Everybody's happy. Everybody's laughing and scratching. So that's the episode. Now, Char, I am aching to find out what you have done to rewrite this and make this better. Now, on second rewatch, this isn't my second time rewatching. I rewatch it all the time. But after evaluating this for a rewrite, this episode was actually a lot better than I remember it.
Yeah, I think we talked last week that this is not a bad episode. I mean, I think it has a very solid story. Jerry Ryan is absolutely superb acting out each of these personalities and seamlessly switching back and forth. And I think the only reason why we didn't keep it is because there just isn't a whole lot of like real actual growth for Seven. Mm-hmm. There's no lasting impact, and you can just forget that it ever happened because it doesn't matter. So that's where I kind of put in my focus on this episode, because so much of it really is good. I don't want to lose a lot of what's really already in place. You got all the good framework for an intriguing opening in the story. You've got pretty decent pacing for the most part. I mean, it might have dried just a little bit in the earlier acts, but it builds up nicely. I mean, the whole thing with the whole Tron aliens, because they remind me of Tron with their little light-up spacesuits. Giving them the vinculum and a virus and all that while inadvertently putting Seven's life in danger. Cool. We can stick with all of that. I don't think there's any reason to change any of it. What I want to do then in my rewrite is make this more personal for Seven so that she does have growth. So the way I thought about doing this was, instead of the voices just using her essentially as a vehicle to express themselves, I want Seven to be aware of what happened when these incidences occur.
Oh, okay.
So she remembers it, and she's conscious while it happens, and yet she can't really, like, she still has to take time to shift out of control. Like, they deliver, like, the, you know, okay, so, like, one of the voices, one of the personalities, they say something, and she can't make them stop. It takes a moment for them to finish, and then she can talk. If that makes any sense. Sort of like a really bad online connection.
From a filmmaker's perspective, how would that go down?
I mean, really, portrayal-wise, it's not much different from how we saw it on screen, where, say, if Seven is the Klingon, then she's going to be the Klingon, and then it's going to take a second, she's going to snap out of it, and we know that she's Seven again. Only Seven is going to realize, what did I just say? What was going on?
Okay.
Okay, so she knows that something's not quite up, or nothing. She knows that something's not quite right.
Okay.
And then, of course, as this goes on, it starts just overwhelming her.
So it's kind of like Picard in All Good Things when he snaps back from the future, back from the past, and he's having a conversation with Tomalak. And Tomalak's like, are we just going to stare at each other? I guess it's not exactly the same thing because...
No, but that's a good parallel. That's a good comparison to make. It's a lot like that, yeah.
Okay.
Sort of like how Picard will hear those voices, rah, 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 which, actually, now that you mentioned that, those voices, whenever Seven would hear them, really sounded like Picard hearing the Q continuum in All Good Things. It really did.
Maybe they stole it. Maybe they, yeah.
They might have. I want to do a side-by-side comparison now and just see if it really is different or not. Okay. But anyway, so... These, of course, are all the personalities of the people that she assimilated over the years. She knows them. They know her. And because of this vinculum, they are able to kind of get into her head and manifest themselves in her own thoughts. And they are not only going to speak for themselves, but they're also going to get into her mind a little bit. They're going to get into her head, literally. And I think the primary thing will be that she's kind of dealing with the fact that she assimilated all these people and she is harboring feelings of guilt about it. She's trying to deal with that fact that as a Borg drone, she essentially took the lives, the individuality at the very least, of all these people. Now as an individual herself, she's trying to come to terms to that. Because on the outside, she seems pretty logical about it and brushes it off, but deep down inside there's more going on than what she's led people to believe. And so I want to see Seven actually really hardcore deal with this. That's kind of the core of what I'm going for. So a lot of structure is going to be the same still, but there's going to be shifts in dialogue. So instead of maybe Seven and Naomi playing Coruscant and she's acting like a cute little kid, maybe she's in the personality of the kid, but it's things like, what have you done with my mom and dad? Why did you turn them into monsters? What is happening? Are you going to turn me into a monster? I'm scared. Naomi, we need to hide. And something like that. And then Seven will come to and she's got to find a way to save face with Naomi and explain away what just happened. Something like that. And we're going to get into the whole thing where it's starting to overwhelm her, the mind meld, all of that. I feel like that all kind of plays out the same, and in the end of the day, it all comes out the same. Now, what this boils down to in terms of messages, meanings, growth for Seven is the ex-drone embracing her individualism is like her passes the cross to bear, and I think for a lot of people, that is true. We've all done something that we were less than happy with or regret. Maybe we did something really absolutely horrible, and we have to live with it. And so this is kind of a way of speaking out to that aspect of things or to those people who are dealing with that sort of thing. And what do? You either ruminate for the rest of your life thinking about it and trying to process it and going nowhere with it, or do you find a way to actually deal with it? How do you do that? And you're not going to solve that problem in this episode, but we need to establish that Seven is decidedly starting to embrace her human side more than the drone side. It's taken over to this point where she actually is able to grow and deal with it. And she's finding a way. She's just going to start to find a way because she has to. And she's going to choose individualism. We leave off with, of course, it's not going to be easy. In the grand scheme of things, we point to this episode as the start of that process, if it were canon. And that's my rewrite. That's really all that I want to change.
Okay. One thing that really intrigued me was the reaction that her personalities would have, and that you described, you know, like about like the little kid being scared instead of just wanting to swim and play Katiskat and everything like that. Because the thing, when I think back to this episode, the thing that most struck a chord with me was the mom who was trying to figure out, I think it was a mom or was it a wife? I can't remember. Somebody was looking for their loved one. Like they're on the ship, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm butchering the story. But it's all of a sudden, you know, that she's crazy, she's a Ferengi, and all of a sudden, but then she gets demure and calm, but you could tell she's worried at the same time, and it brings the emotion to it instead of this like, oh yeah, I'm a Klingon who wants to mate, or I'm a Ferengi who wants to sell you something, I'm a kid who wants to play. You know, like, yeah, it's all, you know, like it's the stereotypes that we're used to, but then we get some genuine emotion with a person who's concerned for their loved one, and that concern is warranted because Seven and her kind took their individuality away. I think if we have more of that, well, it's kind of a double-edged sword where that one moment is memorable because it's the only one we get.
Yeah.
But if we do that a little bit more, we could do it increasingly and kind of up the stakes.
Right.
The emotional stakes.
Yeah, and maybe with such a different array of characters, the difference between them would be enough to keep the impact and make it different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So really, that's all that I have.
Okay. Yours is like an amped up version of the episode.
It is. It's an amp up. Yeah. Yeah. The more I thought about what I would change in the story, the less I thought it needed to be changed. No, it's not a consequential episode, and that was the only thing I could think to actually change. So what about you now?
I toss out the episode. It's gone. It's done.
Okay. Starting from scratch, huh?
Essentially starting from scratch, yeah. No vinculum, no personalities that take over a body or anything like that. But I keep the theme of it the same, where what happens is, in my story, we see her, she's at work. You know, she's in the in stellar cartography, and somebody walks in on her, and she's talking to herself. The person, like, whether it's Chakotay or B'Elanna, it doesn't really matter. And they go, like, who are you talking to? Like, are you on comm right now? And she's like, no, I'm fine. You know, like, and obviously from Star Trek world, you know, like, this isn't just something that happens. You know, like, when we're watching a TV show, and it's like when somebody coughs. When it's like, oh, are you okay? Oh, yeah, it's nothing. Yeah,
yeah.
That person's like has cancer, or he's going, like, that person
exactly.
is 30 minutes from now, they're going to be coughing into a hanky, a white hanky, and it's going to be bloody.
You know,
that's just how TV works.
Yep.
And so it in Star Trek's no different. And so we continue on, and there's some mission. Like, it doesn't really matter what the mission is. Like, they have to go through this nebula. And
is there coffee, you know, in there?
Sure. That's why
cool.
That's why they're going through the nebula.
Okay.
It's because there's coffee in the nebula.
All
and
right.
They're just like, yeah, we're going through the nebula. And so, you know, Seven, you have a job to do. You have to chart this nebula and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, OK, I totally will. People start to notice this about Seven more and more. What I'm proposing might take more than 42 minutes, but I don't care. So people are noticing it more and more. And the audience has no idea what's going on. The audience does not see these things from Seven's perspective. It's always from somebody else's perspective. And then once we get into Act Two, maybe, that's when we start to see things from her perspective, where she's talking to someone who we've never seen before. They are not of the crew. They're not an alien we've ever seen before. They're human. But it's a young man, attractive, sitting on the console. And they're having a conversation, and he's asking her, he says, like, you know, that guy in maintenance, you know, this is the third time he's asked you out. You know, are you going to say yes? And she's like, that's none of your business. And Chakotay, like the camera's on him and her, the camera pans real quick to the left to see Chakotay come in, and then it pans back and the guy's gone. We see this with a couple of different people. And Seven's at work again, where she's in engineering and she's on the second floor. Like, she talks to B'Elanna and about the nebula and coffee. And she's like, well, yeah, you'll get what you need if you go to the second floor. So she goes to the second floor and she's tapping in and she's having a hard time with something. She's having a hard figuring out something. And then someone behind her, an alien who is very like a female alien, very, very, very rigid, very, you can tell is like a no nonsense person. And she comes in and says, you know, if you try swapping the phase inducers for the inductor coils, you know, like maybe that'll help. Maybe that'll do the trick. She's like, oh, maybe you're right. Thanks. And then the person goes back and disappears. What happens is that people start coming in more and more. And people start coming in when she doesn't want them to.
Okay.
They're not always nice. They get a little bit more aggressive. And they start to be angry with her. And all of a sudden, this happens more and more. And then she tries to leave the room because too many people are, you know, bombarding her. And then she goes into the cargo bay, and the cargo bay is full of people.
Okay.
It's like a mosh pit of emotion.
I like that.
Like, just shoulder to shoulder. And then as soon as the doors open, they all turn simultaneously and look at her and start to scream at her and run at her. And then she's like, and then Seven finally realizes that, oh crap, I need to go to sick bay. And so she goes to sick bay. She talked to the doctor, but we don't see that conversation. And the doctor calls the captain. The captain comes down. Seven reveals that because of her time as a Borg, she has all these dormant personalities, you know, in her subconscious of the people that she assimilated over the past 18 years. So it's very similar to the original episode. But she said what happened was, is that last year or 6 months ago, whatever, some time ago, she couldn't stand it any longer. She couldn't handle the loneliness. Even though there was always people around her that she could go to, she couldn't stand the intimate times when she was alone in her cargo bay or when she was off doing doing a job in stellar cartography. She just couldn't handle it. And so she figured out a way to tap into those personalities and those subconscious that are deep within her subconscious and bring them forth.
Wow. So she wanted the voices in her head.
She wanted the voices in her head. She called them forth and she started developing friendships with these people. And she started calling on them when she couldn't figure out a problem. Because the Borg is just a culmination of knowledge from everybody that they've ever assimilated. And so she found a way to do that directly.
Interesting idea.
But what happened is that she opened the floodgates. Is that she would let it trickle in every once in a while, and then she could control it. But then she got a little greedy and started doing it too much. And then, boom, everyone wanted attention. And not everybody was as understanding as the previous ones that she would call on.
Uh-huh.
Some of them blamed her for their position. Or some of them were unaware that they were just the subconscious. Some of them were unaware that they weren't real and that, you know, they're not attached to their bodies anymore. And so they wanted to take over her body for themselves. This is like a two-part episode.
Maybe it should be.
And the doc's like, okay, you know, like, we'll get Tuvok in on this. Maybe he can help you with some mental exercises. I'll help you with drugs and the science and the tech. But, like, we will get this under wraps. And, you know, like, she has a cortical node on her and everything like that.
Yeah.
But what happens is that she goes on and we all think it's going to be fine. But, hey, there's still 20 minutes left in the episode. So, surely, not everything's figured out yet. And, again, like, this might be a two-parter episode. She continues on. But then, even though she has that thing, that node on her, whatever.
On her neck,
the voices start flooding back and she can't handle it. She curls down and she's about to give up. And then somebody who we've never seen before comes in. I don't know if he does it via his voice or we actually see him push them. But this one personality gets rid of all the others and says, like, leave her alone. You know, get away, get away, get away. Leave her alone, leave her alone. And he gets them to go away. And so he says, he's like, listen, if you listen to me, if you stick with me, you won't have to worry about any of those other voices. I will protect you. It'll be fine. And he says, he's like, all I ask for in return is that you don't push me out. You know, like you go about your day and don't push me out, and I'll make sure that all of them are pushed out.
Seems like a good idea at the time.
Yeah, it seems like a reasonable, you know, a reasonable request. And so as this moves on, this is why I'm thinking we're bleeding into second episode territory, where as this goes on, he starts to ask more and more. It's kind of like Darth Vader, where it's just like, I'm altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it any farther. I don't know why I made Darth Vader Scottish, but I did just then. And he starts to take over her body every once in a while. It's like just a faint touch, you know, like of a console, just a breath of air, a whiff of Neelix cooking, and then he says he doesn't want to do that again. You know, like, but he starts doing it more and more, and then he starts saying, okay, now you're going to do stuff for me. Now you're going to do this. Now you're going to go to this person. You know, then now you're going to go talk to this person. Now, you know what? I feel like going to this location, take a shuttlecraft and go this way. And she's like, I can't. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do it. He's like, well, I'll just take over your body and do it anyway. We see this internal struggle. For the longest time, she's not admitting this to the doc because she's scared that if she admits it to the doc, he's going to take over. The bad guy, the bad personality is going to take over or unleash it. And so it's kind of that.
It's a catch 22.
Yeah, it's that catch 22 where he has manipulated her so much into saying like, listen, if you tell anybody about me, I'm not going to do these things for you anymore. And so she had to keep her mouth shut. But she couldn't take it any longer. And so she went to the doc. But then right as she goes to the doc to tell him, he takes over her body and says everything's okay. Like as Seven. It's like, no, everything's fine. I'm sorry. I don't know why I came in here. But the doc knows her well enough to know that there's something up. So he tries to investigate her and scan her without her knowing her, quote unquote, him. And then he finds a way to trap her and six Tuvok on her. And Tuvok goes into her brain. And then it's kind of like in the episode Infinite Regress, where he's in the brain, but there's just one person. It's just one person. It's the bad guy who I don't have a name for yet.
Okay.
And so Tuvok tries to beat the crap out of him using those cool martial arts moves that we see every once in a while. But then the guy, like once the guy realizes that he's going to get defeated, because this is all like in the Matrix, you know, like it's all just an analogy for like, is he actually beating him with his fists? No, but he's using his mental prowess to beat him into submission. Once the guy realizes that he's going to lose, he unleashes all of the other personalities on Tuvok. And like Tuvok is about to get lost. But then out of nowhere, Seven comes in. I don't know what she does. I don't think she does anything physical, but she just screams at the top of her lungs and tells them to stop. And all of them do stop. And she says, I don't want you anymore. I don't need you anymore. Go away. And they all go away. Seven grabs Tuvok and then they wake up together. And then she starts the long path to recovery and true individuality.
Interesting lesson for her to learn there. I could see this being a two-parter, although a part of me thinks it's too long to be just one part. But I also wonder if it would be too slow to be two parts.
Right, right.
And that would entirely depend on how it's written and portrayed. And of course, she didn't write the whole thing line by line. But
I see what you mean, because I feel the exact same way.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's a really intriguing idea, and it's sort of like combining an abusive relationship with Seven's struggle between individuality and being a drone.
Yes. Yes, yeah, and that's kind of what I was going for with the abusive relationship thing. And I also borrowed a little bit, just a little bit, from Children of Dune.
Oh, okay.
The book Children of Dune, where there's this really cool character called Alia, and she is a victim of abomination, where she had consciousness from the moment of birth, and so she was self-aware at the moment of birth, and she had all of the knowledge of like her ancestors before her. And there was a time when all of those ancestors started, you know, like you know, pestering her, and she started to go mad. And one of her most evilest ancestors came in and said, if you let me use your body every once in a while, I'll make the other ones go away. And so from that little segment that I stole from Children of Dune, I just wanted to be clear with everyone.
I gotcha. And I've not read Children of Dune, so thank you for the synopsis. All right. Well, that's pretty freaking cool. So we went in very different directions in rewriting this thing. And yet, I mean, I think there's still at the core of it a lot of similarity, because you're still dealing with seven grappling with individuality versus droneness versus, you know, or like, but kind of her being her own worst enemy in a way.
Yeah, it's just I wanted to keep the moral lesson. I wanted to keep the fact that she assimilated people, and those people's personalities are still there. So I think, yeah, we end up in the same place, but in very different ways.
Yeah. Well, that's what's so much fun about these rewrites. I have no idea what you come up with during the week. You have no idea what I come up with. And we reveal it here and then throw it down. It's a lot of fun. Yep. I always look forward to these for that, because it's always a surprise. But rewriting Infinite Regress is not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It would be a lot of fun to be able to MST3K an episode like Arena, which, who doesn't love poking fun at a rock-throwing Gorn? I mean, come on, you know?
Can you find a rudimentary lathe?
Exactly. I wrote that on the Babel conference today because Guy Fleegman from Galaxy Quest is the greatest character ever.
Earl Grey.
This 547-meter long, 32-deck, 502-crew member.
That's awesome.
To the journey!
Now we go to Once Upon a Time.
Neelix tries to... Warp 5.
If they could have kind of told us, it's more of a future for us, but we're going to build up to the Star Trek you know. And Larry's comment back was, well, that would mean that they kind of were planning it out and they knew what they were doing ahead of time.
Buzzing.
That sounds right. Like Larry.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I will say, if you want to see what it's really like when someone slices open a tauntaun to get inside to stay warm, like in the real world.
Yeah.
That was the best part of the movie. I'm like, really? Han Solo made it look so easy. This is what happens? This is terrifying.
The 602 Club.
It's about that transformation of getting Oliver to be able to see themselves as something more than vigilantes, but being heroes.
Yeah, and there is a lot of... I like that, because there is a lot in the quote-unquote, as you're calling it, the island story, which the island now is Hong Kong, as you pointed out.
Yeah,
earlier.
I mean, yeah, it's a little bigger than an island.
Literary Treks.
Dan, are you sure that flavor isn't something like a green liquid voodoo drink?
Oh, man. This.
Because that could be the flavor that we're going for. Boy.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available however you want to get your podcasts. And of course, we couldn't do any of this without you, the wonderful listener, because we are a listener-supported network on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/trekfm and check out becoming a monthly subscriber if you aren't already. There's all sorts of cool perks in it for you, whether it's a monthly roundtable, sneak peeks of early episodes, or the patron.zone website where you get special access to things that only patrons of the network get. So check that out, and we would appreciate all of your support. And especially on TTJ, we want to thank our associate producers. Those fantastic people are Aaron Harvey, Jamie Deuce, Kenneth Tripp, and Bruce Lish. Thanks, you guys, very much. We always enjoy giving you guys a shout-out because we appreciate you so much. Another way you can support the show is by going on iTunes and writing us a review if you haven't done that already. That vastly helps us in so many ways in terms of other people finding the show, getting the word out. You can even go to our groovy little section of iTunes. We are at itunes.com/trekfm, and we have a pretty website that is beautifully organized. It's pretty cool because we are a featured podcast provider on iTunes, and not many podcasts out there get that honor. We're lucky, and that's pretty fantastic.
And guys, we cannot stress to you how much that means to us and how much that helps us. And it takes absolutely nothing from you except a couple minutes of your time, sometimes not even a minute of your time. We have a lot of listeners out there. And if you're hearing the sound of my voice, please, please, please give us that 1 minute where you can go to iTunes and write us a review. Give us 5 stars if you want to give us 5 stars. And if you do, yes, we'll mention you on the podcast. We give you entertainment every week, and hopefully you enjoy us. So please do this one little thing for us.
Totally, because it goes a long, long way. The accumulation of all those reviews, all those ratings, that just astronomically affects the weird algorithm that iTunes uses to help people find podcasts, publicize the podcast, lets people know what's hot and up and coming and blah, 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 blah. What we're just saying is, please... We're done with another one now, and it's time to move on, and we've got something kind of cool coming up next week. What have we got?
Next week, we're doing a commentary. That's right, you heard me right, a commentary. We're doing one of my personal favorites. I talk about this episode all the time. It's in my top 5 episodes of Favorite Voyager from Season 2, Episode 6, Twisted. Voyager encounters an inversion field which twists and distorts the ship's hull. But you'll have to tune in next week to find out. Until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!